Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murimu here with you today. We're going to be talking about, I think last time we spoke about Anthony Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister, recognising the state of Palestine and how that seems like a hypocrisy, given that the Yidinji Nation has its own government, there's no treaty, it's older than Palestine, for example.
You know, the three times more language groups, three times more on a more condensed area in a more remote area where there's barely a road, barely any infrastructure in place, and yet, they can get this independence, 50 years of independence.
Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murimu here with you today, and a big, big thank you to Bumba Vera Media, 98.7 FM, in the city of Gimoy, broadcasting program all around the world, also the Yidinji Broadcast Service, which is also pumping out this content via the radio stations, and we just thank you for your audience, usually every week, and thank you to the nations that allow us to use your spectrum to share this information. And, we're going to be talking about a number of things. Bumi has been on the road for the last few weeks now, and he was supposed to get back today. I'm not too sure where he is, but he'll be listening to the program, no doubt. And Yirilim and Ginyara with me today, and we're going to be talking about, I think last time we spoke about Anthony Albanese, the Australian Prime Minister, recognising the state of Palestine and how that seems like a hypocrisy, given that the Yidinji Nation has its own government, there's no treaty, it's older than Palestine, for example. What is holding that back? But we're going to go back a week or so, and the Papua New Guinea independence celebrations took place there, 50 years. And so let's have a listen to what Anthony Albanese had a chat to Sky News about the wonderful road to independence for Papua New Guinea.
Well, Independence Day celebrations have taken place in Papua New Guinea this morning. Our chief anchor, Kieran Gilbert, is there right now alongside a special guest, the Prime Minister. Kieran?
Pete, thank you very much. Yeah, joining us is the Prime Minister, who's been a special guest here for the 50th anniversary of independence. And your counterpart, your friend James Marape, spoke in the speech today a lot about this being the most diverse nation on earth. Getting to 50 years is an achievement in itself, isn't it?
It sure is. There's a strong democracy. There's 1,000 tribes here, 800 languages. Think about that. Not dialects, 800 languages. There's very different cultures, and the highlands is very different from down on the plains or around the coastlines. And for many of those tribes, they were very isolated. They didn't have that contact with each other. Whereas our culture, First Nations people going back, there was a lot more exchange and people moving around. That's what Welcome to Country is about. People moving around the continent. Here you had development that was very different, and the strength of the democracy here is a great credit to the people of PNG. It's a credit to the founders of independence, people like Somare and others who got the great praise today, justifiably. And importantly, I thought it was a very significant moment today when the Prime Minister spoke about the flag being lowered, not torn down, of Australia. And that happened 50 years ago. It was a peaceful transition. The Whitlam government supported it, part of Gough Whitlam's legacy that is so important. But it was something that showed great courage for people to go, no, we're going to be our own independent nation, and that's what we're celebrating today.
Yeah, and Gough Whitlam at the time said, we won't be fully free until PNG is free, and that's what it is now. And you see this beautiful parliament behind us, which an Australian architect helped design. And you've announced today we're going to contribute to another wing of the parliament. And I guess it's sort of the symbolism alongside the very real message that democracies can't be taken for granted.
Absolutely.
In this day and age. Yeah.
And this is a magnificent building. I had the great honour of being the first foreign leader to address the parliament here after I was elected in January of just a couple of years ago. And
they're outgrowing it. They
that
need,
was a,
they need
yeah,
an
well,
extension.
What they want is a ministerial wing as well, so that you can have government services right here where Parliament is. They've continued to grow. It's a country now of, they're not sure exactly what the population is. They know it's at least 10 million. And it's a country that's continuing to develop. It's a country that has seen that economic growth happen. There are challenges in a country like this. Australia will continue to provide support. And one really tangible way of celebrating the 50th anniversary is for Australia to assist with building the democracy, literally the building that will help to house the democracy.
Okay, I'm going to go to you, Gunyara. I don't want to say it, but it sounds very patronising and a very colonial view of what's taking place in Papua New Guinea and I would say elsewhere. Not that it's saying something bad against Papua New Guinea or anything like that, but really it is hypocritical from Anthony Albanese to, on one occasion with Palace On Now with Papua New Guinea, but not Udinji, not all the other nations on this continent as well.
Well, did you notice the comment of 800 tribes on an island that big? It's an island. It's not a continent or a, you know, a small continent like what Australia is, which has got, by the way, 250. Or, yeah. Absolutely, it's half the island. And think about, they have, you know, the three times more language groups, three times more on a more condensed area in a more remote area where there's barely a road, barely any infrastructure in place, and yet, they can get this independence, 50 years of independence. Whether it is independence, I will wait and see, because how I see it is still a group of native troopers that may be working for and on behalf of something bigger or better other than the tribal people up in the highlands and that sort of stuff. But why should 800 people on a very remote island, a very remote place, be allowed to get independence when... On this continent, just think about this, on this continent, they've acknowledged that sovereignty hasn't been ceded. They acknowledge that sovereignty is not extinguished. They acknowledge that in the Uluru Statement, they said the sovereignty was here first of the Aboriginal people. We were first in time, best dressed, you know, hadn't gone away, still here, can't get rid of it. And yet they won't do the recognition stuff, the proper recognise those as the true and correct landowners of the place. It's just, hypocrisy is not the word. You know, hypocritical is not the word. What is the word is there's an absolute manifestation of colonialism here that refuses to surrender the power back to the true owners. You know, they're just now bludgeoning, so they become a belligerent occupant. And under the international rules, belligerent occupant, we owe them no allegiance. We owe nothing to the Commonwealth of Australia. They've actually got to sort themselves out, and they're acting contrary to the charter of the UN. They go up there and recognise that the sovereignty of the Papua New Guineans is bigger and better than what we're even allowed to think about having. And it's not that they're going to give us sovereignty. As they say in the speech, it's not ours to give. It's for you to exercise your sovereignty over. Now, Udinji is doing this. Udinji is exercising its sovereignty. It is extending how far its reach has to go to do what it's got to do. And yet the Albanese, it promised Albanese, is blatantly refusing to even come and talk to Udinji Nation about what can we do to work together. You know, you see up there in that part of the world, there is issues, I feel, on the West Papuan side that need to be addressed and can be addressed. But that island is being unified now. The Crown pulled out, or the English, the Crown and Right of the UK has withdrawn. I don't know what the true Crown is there. Is it still the same monarch or whatever it is? It is morally wrong. It's legally wrong what's going on here. They cannot produce a doctrine of as to how they can maintain their sovereignty here. That is Australia I'm talking about. And yet they go up there and recognise the sovereignty of the tribal people. Now, he mentioned tribes very specifically a few times. The tribal people, 800 tribes, language groups, they're allowed to have their independence. Why aren't the Aboriginal people who own this place allowed to have the same? And why isn't Australia capitulating to them or saying we need to work together to work something out? Is it the value of the asset that they want to know and control here? What do we do with all the Australians? This is what treaties are all about.
Yeah, I think there's also this the the view that that independence is good for them because they were living in rainforest and you know, out in the bush by themselves and disconnected from the world and all this stuff. When really, that's the way it has been for thousands of years. I'm not saying it should stay like that for the remainder of the life of this planet, but all I'm saying is that maybe people's perception of things aren't best for others who are actually from there. I mean, that's what I'm reiterating today.
Well, let's have a look. I'm going to use colour very specifically here now. Let's have a look at what's around us. You know, have a look in, you want to call it Indonesia. Are they Europeans of white descent, or are they of the original descent there? Let's go to Papua New Guinea. Are they of white descent, European descent, the white colour? No, if you have a look at them, the colour is very dark. They're black. Let's go out into the islands out here, the Solomon Islands. Let's go out further, Vanuatu, Fiji. What's their colour? You know, so I'm using this colour as a reference point to, are they European blood or are they of their blood that was originally there? Australia is the only place of white blood that is left here in the whole Southwest Pacific. Why are they here and why aren't the original people, the people of dark skin that were originally here, and don't take offence to colour, why are those people not allowed to assert their sovereignty? Why are they being held back from asserting their sovereignty by the European manifestation of colonialism? Is that what it is? Because if it is that, then they're acting contrary to the Charter of the UN. Fancy going up there talking to Papua New Guinea saying, we acknowledge your sovereignty, when they haven't got the hide to come down here and talk to the Aboriginal people properly. They're trying to keep the native troopers, keeping them inside Australia. Why do they go over to Palestine talking about, we want to recognise the two-state solution? Get back here and sort out this problem first, because the true owners are those of the dark skin origin, you know, the heritage who's been here forever and a day. They're not the Western world. So why is Anthony Albanese, as the Prime Minister of Australians, not of us, not of Yidinji, we're not claiming to be Australian for 1 minute. We were never Australian. We never will be Australian. For a treaty to be successful, we will stay in our original capacity as Yidinji. And this is the hard part for people to understand. What authority will Australia have over us as the Yidinji nation if we stand up in our true capacity? They'll have no control.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, we might give you a voice inside of Australia. We might give you this, we might give you that. You know, I hear often that they have the First Nations First policy inside of Australia and they're very proud of that. Yeah, First Nations First in jail, First Nations First to be shot by police, First Nations First for children being taken away from their homes, First Nations First to be dispossessed, First Nations First to be dispersed and further spun into poverty. So it's the same animal. It's just got different clothes on. And Yirrlim, we can only talk. I mean, I get frustrated because we're saying this consistently now, but somehow people still believe that the emperor's got the clothes on.
Look at what happened here, and you know, using New Guinea as an example. In Australia, you know, obviously the first fleet arrived, and then you know the colonialism machine took over, and it basically enforced after the point where you know, Australia gained its independence. I'm using my fingers with the inverted commas from England. It's an enforcement of a single governing body over more than 200 different nations here, And that's the model that colonization brings with it, is that there is no recognition of the existing people at all. And, yeah, that's really what happened in New Guinea, because although there's this facade of independence, what was left behind is a single government over 800 tribes. And the 800 tribes never voted for that. That's an arrangement between the previous Australian government and the selected few that they put in their place.
And that's what I was trying to allude to earlier. Is it true independence where those tribes have now voted to appoint a central governing body so it can represent them at the international world, you know, and this is the important part about it. But why can they even have that illusion of independence when the tribes here are disallowed? Why are they saying, yeah, we recognise your stuff, but we won't recognise yous here, we won't talk with yous here because we're the governing body? As you said, it's a colonial mentality, but at least in some sort of tokenistic manner that they've withdrawn out of there and let at least the people of descent govern their so-called nation inside the UN. So how does that work? Why aren't we doing that here? Why are we so, dispossessed and kept down? Why don't we have a black prime minister? Why don't we have black politicians? Why don't we have tribal or Aboriginal politicians everywhere with the minority of white politicians in amongst it like they do over there? You know, are we third-rate people in the world? Are we third-rate humans in the world? How come we can't be equal to the rest of the world? How come we don't go to Europe, go to Britain, for example, and set up like the Africans did the African people that went over there, black people went up to Scotland and said, we're setting up a business here, we've got to set up a government. You know, and everyone laughed at them. Oh, use the black fellas in amongst white fellas. Well, hang on a sec. Look at Australia. Use the white fellas in amongst black fellas. What gives you such a special right to do this? And then to make matters worse, you know, that really stuck in my neck was that Australia, Anthony Albanese goes to the UN, goes over there to give a big speech that we need to get a seat on the Security Council. Hang on a sec. You couldn't have broken any more rules and resolutions that you already have, and then go over there saying, look, we're going to be the almighty, those who sit on the Security Council to judge other nations, you know, judge other people. What height has he got to even go and ask for that in the first place? Which is why we're saying, why don't they stop mucking around over in the Middle East? It's got nothing to do with them over there. Stop mucking around in New Guinea. It's got nothing to do with them there. And get back home here, get back to what you want to call Australia, your world, and sort out the mess that you got going on right here now. Because until it's sorted out, Australia is actually acting as a manifestation of colonialism, which is acting contrary to the charter of the UN, the very charter that they took part in revitalising or building it. They created something when they didn't have the right to do so for this part of the world. So the height of Australia, the hypocrisy, it is just, to me, it is insanity at its best. You know, and they think that they're going to be the boss here, and yet all along they say, like in the Uluru Statement, use people of the First Nations and you own the place under your law, not Australian law, your law. So if you own it like that, they're going to go out and say to the world, no, we own that territory. No more. They don't own our territory. They definitely don't, because I've asked them for the doctrine on it. How did you get to own the place? They said, we just took it. What a breach of international law by taking someone else's country.
Yeah, when you look at the size of the Yidinji Nation, for example, it is, you know, a considerable piece of territory. It's a wonderful place, one of the best in the world. It's bigger than the Principality of Monaco. It's bigger than San Marino, you know, Liechtenstein and Luxembourg. These are small countries. And, they have their own national vote at the UN, for example. So you can't say that we're too small or we don't have the capacity or whatnot. Yidinji have been running this place for thousands of years with 100%, you know, with environmental care, you know, without polluting the place, you know, with all this talk of global climate change and carbon credits and everything else. Yidinji are the experts. So the point being is that there is a belligerent occupier on the territory that does not want to give up the roost, so to speak. And I think that's very, very telling in a world that's changing very, very quickly. You know, it's going to be 150 years since British contact next year in Ghimoi, for example. So it's only taken us that long, less than that actually, to work it all out, how rotten it is. And if people can't work that out for themselves, then they're part of the problem.
And it's that group that are belligerent occupants on our country that have gone to the UN saying we deserve a seat on the Security Council. What's the Security Council all about? What is the United Nations all about? Is it about fairness across the world or is it about perpetrating something else? And this is the part that gets me. Anthony Albanese and Australia had the collective hide to want to go over there and say, look at us, we're a model citizen of the UN family, when they have broken every resolution, they have broken every article just about of, like, the International Covenant for Civil and Political Rights. All peoples have their right to do what they want to do, look after themselves. They've broken that because they're over here stopping us from asserting our own autonomous function, you know, as the nation that was here first that owns our part of the world. The nation owns this part of the world, not Australia. And yet they're going over to the Security Council saying we need to have a seat on this. This is how good we are. And if they get a seat on that, it actually shows me that the United Nations and the Security Council are nothing more than a joke. Little more than a joke, and that's stupid, you know, because what faith do you have in the United Nations then if they let people like, you know, and I'll call it a person like the Commonwealth of Australia get a seat there? They're going to just say, yep, colonialism in all its forms and manifestations is good, which is contrary to the to Resolution 1514 of 1960. All manifestations must come to a speedy and unconditional end, and yet they say, yeah, Australia, we'll agree with you. You can come onto our Security Council. After you've broken every resolution and every act and every piece of international law, you've broken it by suppressing and holding down the people like the Yidinji Nation who are trying to assert their sovereignty when they go and recognise Palestine. Oh, we'll give you the two-state solution. They recognise the sovereignty of the tribes, the 800 tribes in Papua New Guinea. Fancy the height of Australia doing that. You know, this is where the hypocrisy is at its best.
Yeah, everyone knows it's rotten. Sometimes people can't find out the cause for it. But really, that colonial impact and the post-colonial tea club that Australia is, really is, it doesn't want to give it up. And even though it's agreed to do it, the benefits are too much. And they're, you know, the people that are hanging on to it are the ones that are also trying to convince Australia that don't look over here, don't worry about Yidinji and don't worry about the sovereignty and everything else.
Yeah, well, of course, that's the measure by the standard of the UN, really, is that it's the colonial view. You know, how things look is based on their point of view. You know, don't take into the fact that there were already hundreds of nations operating peacefully here before they arrived. And, of course, as I spoke about, the many tribes of New Guinea. And, you know, it is a measure of your social performance. You know, how is your country, your people, how are they performing socially? Are they getting along? Is it working? And the best measure of that is how they treat the country they're living on. And, you know, if you look at the world, it doesn't look very pretty from a health point of view of the world in its own. So each individual country, you know, look what's happened to our nation, the lands of this continent, all the different nations of what's happened to it, the destruction, the pollution. And that's the same thing, that's just a reflection of the social structure. It's not a good social structure. What's been introduced here is not functional, it's dysfunctional. It functions for a few, but, you know, the world isn't going to survive if only a few are living. It needs all of us to get there, and that's really the tribal perspective.
You're listening to Black Lord Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break.
matter if you're black and no matter if you're white. Live, live, right, right, live, live, right, right. No matter if you're black and no matter if you're white. Live,
welcome back to the show. We're talking about the hypocrisy of the Australian Prime Minister sort of acknowledging Palestine and Papua New Guinea and everything else, I guess. Gunyara, the United Nations is not the perfect model. We know that. In fact, we don't want to be part of it. It's that rotten. But still, they have their rules that they have established, this so-called rule of law that they should subscribe to. And it's that which they've committed to. They have to deliver on it. They can't just – otherwise, what is it all about? I mean, you know, what's stopping someone from getting a machine gun or a bomb and bombing other people just because they think they're right or whatnot? I mean, this is – there has to be some sort of order in the world, and as wrong as it is, the United Nations is full of rottenness, but at the end of the day, it's there – making, not ours. We're just saying, no, you've committed to this, Indigenous rights, decolonisation, then stick to it.
You've got to remember that the United Nations is a something created. It's the spoils of war where the victors can create the future, you know. So when you have a modern war like they did in World War II, a certain group of people got pushed back to surrender. The other ones who won the war, you know, they had to create the United Nations, of which you look at who all the member states are, the original founders of the UN. So they were basically the victors of World War II, and they created this thing called the United Nations. Now, United Nations is not the best thing in the world, but it's the only thing that sort of resembles an international order. And of that international order at the time, you know, they could create this body of international law. But no one is really adhering to that law 100%. And that's the sad part about it. They expect you as a citizen of Australia, for example, to adhere to every single law that they've made. And that's how citizens of Australia must adhere to all the obligations. Yet, of the international order, how many are fully adhering to the laws and resolutions and the norms of the international order? Very, very few, because you know, you see so much war and an argument going on today. But it's this thing called Australia that are here, that is being allowed to be here. So there must be other international member states of the UN family that are agreeing with Australia to let it be here. They should be saying, no more, Australia, you are there at this stage, but you've got to surrender your authority and work a deal with the local tribes. And, you know, we don't want to take over Australia itself per se, because there's 250 groups here. But those 250 nations, those First Nations that own the place, must sign off to let Australia represent them for and on behalf of them at international law, not in domestic law. If you read UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, very plain, very simple, very clear. Articles 3, 4 and 5, the Indigenous people have the right to self-determination, the self-government. They got their right to their own autonomous functions. They can raise an economy, but they can also take part in the life of the state if they so choose. Now, if they don't so choose, you can't force them to assimilate. You know, this is how it all works. And then we get to where they've been dispossessed of their stuff. You know, like Yidinji, as you rightfully said, Lazirulam said, the place has been destroyed. It's got all this stuff going on, pollution, the destruction. That's not our doing. That's the modern world's doing, you know. And there are Yidinji people that are seen through Australian citizens that are contributing just as much to that as the rest of the Australians. So we've got to say, okay, how can we fix this problem? But we must start right in the very start and settle the past. We've got to sort that problem out right there. Otherwise, Australia is acting belligerently on this part of the world. And how can it get a seat at the Security Council? Now, we must remember the application to start to get a seat at the Security Council probably started 10 years ago. I think it was Julie Bishop, when she was the Foreign Minister, was over there trying to lobby after the last non-permanent seat on the Security Council when Australia had that. the last time, they started to lobby for the next time, which is now, and they're talking about the seat in 2028, 2029, somewhere there. So it started, it's a 12-year period or 13-year period to get to there. Look, we know it's not Anthony Albanese himself, but he's in charge of the circus now. He's in charge of the whole show that is belligerently occupying lands of other people when it shouldn't be. Now, it has a global ripple effect. Don't worry about that. And that's why I'm glad Yuralum actually mentioned, was it true independence for those 800 tribes in Papua New Guinea, or are they being controlled by a colonial master somewhere behind the scenes? We just don't know. But we got to give them, I suppose, the benefit of the doubt. So, yes, those 800 tribes have agreed with this. Even though there's a lot of dysfunction in the government up there, you know, where crime is pretty rife and all that sort of stuff, we've got to let them say, okay, at least they got the chance to form the government. Those representatives of those 800 tribes could form the government. Here in Australia, it's the exact opposite. They are not going to let any of our Aboriginal elders and leaders and smart people get to be the Prime Minister of Australia. Why is that? Because the white Australia policy still applies to this very day, which is why Anthony Albanese, the white Australian, is overseas trying to ask for a seat on the Security Council. He's the one over there talking to the Papua New Guinean government. They should have howled him out and said, yous get out of town, get out of here. Yous are not allowed into our country because you're a white fellow that's suppressing and subjecting the Aboriginal people.
New Guinea really is an example of what the voice looks like. If the voice had been a yes vote, that would be New Guinea.
Precisely.
State treaty, that's New Guinea. It's all happening within the original colonial government, not with the people that are up there.
Yep, yeah, I agree 100% with that. And that's why, like I said, is it true independence, where the 800 tribes have come together and said, this is what we want as a governing body? You know, is this where we want to be?
Do they want a governing body? Do they want to continue as the 800 tribes, as they always have, for much longer than any of the colonial countries have been around?
Well, what they can do then is say, okay, how do we interact with the international world? You know, so how about we appoint an elder from each of our tribes, come and sit together in matters that affect the overall, I like to use Fukushima as a good example. The radioactivity that flowed out of those reactors is flowing into the ocean, which probably by ocean currents is reaching our shores right here now. How do we tell that international world you're poisoning our fish?
Yeah, I think it's very important to remind people while we're having a go at Australia, it's not something that we're doing because it's fun or it's easy. It's absolutely no. You said you were going to do this. We're going to keep you held. We're going to hold you to account. You said that Indigenous peoples have the rights to self-government. Yidinji is here. It has a government. We want to look after ourselves. Thanks very much. But now you're changing the tune. You don't want us to have our own expressions of sovereignty, our number plates, our this, that, and the other. So that's, you know, that's a genocide. You're literally trying to rub out Yidinji from the history books by creating your own version of Yidinji inside of Australia.
It was always genocide. They just don't like the sound of that word, genocide. Didn't Paul Keating say we done the murdering? We stole the children. We stole their territory. Didn't Paul Keating say that in 1992? How basic is that to understand what it was? We stole their children. Go and read the Genocide Act. Go and read it. Taking the children from one society and putting it in another. They were the Aboriginal people at the time. The British said, oh, they're all ours. They didn't ask the Aboriginal people, do you want to be part of our world? When they produced the Constitution, we, the people of Queensland, New South Wales, all this, the colonies of these, of which Yidinji were never allowed to participate, by the way, if you go and have a look at that, in Queensland, all the Aboriginal nations were not allowed to participate in any of the conventions that come to the Constitution, you know, the fruition of the Constitution. They were banned altogether. You're not allowed to have input. Why? Because you weren't considered British subjects. You were considered less than animal status, which is what they're doing to this very day. Why does Australia not want to talk to us? Do you consider us third-rate humans? Do you consider us equal to animals? What is the problem? This is what I'm saying with Australia. They are considering that, which is why the Papua New Guinean government, those people up there should have told Anthony Albanese, you don't come to our 50-year celebration. Anthony Albanese is up there trying to develop a defence pact with them. Why? Why is he trying to suck up to them now? Why is he trying to be nice? Why aren't they asking, what are you doing up here, especially when you're suppressing your own Indigenous populations? And I shouldn't say your own, because it's not, Yidinji is not Australia. You know, I read the Uluru Statement. our Indigenous, our Aboriginal nations. We were never possessed by Australia. That's the thing. The word our is possessive. And same as your population, that's possessive words. We were never Australia's possession, ever. So the New Guineans should be saying, look, you get out of up here. Go back and sort out your problem. The UN Security Council should be saying, Anthony, get out of here. You should be shunned by the UN United Nations family. Get out until you go and sort out your problem. Don't ever ask for a seat on a Security Council where the integrity has to be of the utmost. You know, they've got to be beyond reproach. So don't come here begging to get onto the Security Council when you can't even do the right thing back home, because lip service is very cheap. It's telling that you are not going to uphold international law.
Yeah, and that's the gripe, I guess, that I have, is that at least with ScoMo and Scullion, you know, they were willing to sit down and meet and talk about these things in private and whatnot. That's fine. But, you know, Penny Wong, the Foreign Affairs Minister for Australia, and now Anthony Albanese, not even willing to have a conversation. Yet when you're talking about security and defence treaties and things like that, this easily could go to China, the same way that the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu and others were talking about China and doing deals with China. And the, you know, the Attorney General Department of Australia saying that you can't do deals with China. So why wouldn't you want to talk to us? This is the question that we keep asking. Is, you know, and Bumi says, it's, well, what do you want from us? What do you want from us, Australia?
Well, you know, we could also talk to New Guinea. It's no different to talking to Australia, in the sense of that the government doesn't really represent the nations that were there before they were appointed or turned up. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting road. But, you know, as Murimu keeps pointing out, the whole point of Yidinji is that we are helping resolve the past and settle the past and secure the future. And that's about people coming together. It's not about money. It's not about any of these things. It's how we work together as one. And that's the cultural perspective. That's what we have, and you know that's the way forward.
Yeah, Ganyara, I think when you're looking at all these things now, Palestine getting its state or being recognised as a state, the world is in a mess. So I mean, you know, how does one prioritise Indigenous rights over all these other things that are happening at the moment with Ukraine and Russia? And I don't mean to sound disrespectful to those matters. Obviously, people are dying there. But if it's right, you should do it. And if it's wrong, you shouldn't do it. So this is what we're saying.
Sort out your own backyard first. Before you go traipsing around the world trying to sort out someone else's problems, sort out your own problem here. That's what we're saying. Now, Anthony, if you want to be the boss of Australia, you need to sort out the problem here. The problem here is that you don't have a doctrine as to how you can assert sovereignty over all these people. Until you have that, it's going to be forced subjugation. You know, it's going to be they are standing on us to take all our resources. Why? Because you don't have the doctrine. If you sort that problem out right now and you get empowered by the tribal nations, you get empowered to go forward and act for and on behalf of those tribal nations in the international sphere. If he had a treaty with us, we would say, yep, Anthony, you go over and you got to do, and we will instruct you what our position is to go over to the UN and say, yep, I deserve a seat on the Security Council. We would say, yes, you do, because you've started to adhere to international norms, international resolutions, international agreements, international covenants and treaties. You're doing that right, so you deserve a seat. But until you do that, you don't deserve anything. You deserve to be shunned and pushed out by the UN family. So this is what we're saying. Come and do the right thing first before you go traipsing off, you know, lairizing about, look at me, look at me, look at me, look how good I am. You go over to New Guinea and say, oh, we want to do a deal. He hadn't got our authority to do a deal for on behalf of our territory, let alone anyone else's. So he's gone up there as a belligerent occupant saying, we need you to do a defence pact with us, you know, against someone else who may come legitimately. You know, he's saying, oh, we've got to go up there and defend ourselves from China. Hang on a sec. What would happen? As the woman from the Attorney General's office said 2 years ago, exactly, she said 2 years ago, you have a right to do a treaty with China. Now, If China come and does a treaty with us and sits here on our country, they got every right to be here, and no defence pact with New Guinea can stop that, you know, because this is our right of sovereignty. As we said to Senator Waters at the time, going back 8 years, because we haven't ceded sovereignty, we still retain the right to cede sovereignty. He goes, yeah, don't do that just yet, please. Just don't do it yet. We don't know what to do. Come and listen to us and come and talk to us, and we can work this out together as adults and try and get the best for all Australians, not ourselves, but for all Australians, and it won't be for one taxpayer dollar.
Yeah, that's important to remember too. I mean, obviously, Yirrkala, this Yidinji story is absolutely done in the right spirit, let's say, in that everyone is here to make sure that the Yidinji nation is forever in existence, and that it never gets discarded or bred out or killed off and died. They died out. And that's what the White Australia policy and was built on. And because they did say that, you know, that they were saying that Aboriginal people weren't intelligent enough to cast a vote and all that kind of rubbish back in the day. But this is done in the right spirit in that it's not even about a blackfellow thing. It's about Yidinji being about people living here on this land, and that the elders are the ones that help direct and lead when it needs to. And that leadership is built on thousands of years of knowledge and experience.
Well, of course, you know, let's go back to the measure I just used for a measure of how healthy your society is. You know, for tens of thousands of years, this was a garden paradise. And as you said, we're coming up to the 150th year of colonial arrival here in our Yidinji nation. And in that 150 years, we've faced so much, you know, human atrocities, but the country has also faced it. What's been done to our country, the loss of trees, the loss of health, the introduction of poisons, of animals that don't work with the country, of all the things that aren't good, is a reflection of the society that arrived 150 years ago. They have no healthy structure of the social society, and it's reflected by what they do to the land. And we as a nation want to share those secrets. You know, it might seem obvious, but obviously it's not too obvious because they're not getting it right. So it has to be reintroduced to have a healthy society, and that's what Yidinji Nation is, a healthy society that can lead the way for all the people that are currently living on here. It's not just about the Yidinji traditional people who have lived here for tens of thousands of years, but it's about every person living, every human being living on our nation, how we can come together and work together.
Yeah, and that tribal adoption of citizens and things like that is a very important part of it. But ultimately, it is time for the stale colonial voice to move to the side now, because the Yidinji Nation has at its disposal eons of wonderful leaders, and there are great business leaders. There are wonderful people in the education system. There's like we have more than enough to really make this work.
Yeah, well, look at some of the amazing words that come out of the UN. You know, the UNDRIP, you know, the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous People, is a great example of a document that defines how things should be managed. And the reflection of that society, the effectiveness of the United Nations and all the nations within it, if measured against that same scorecard that I said, you know, look at the nation and look at the quality of the land that they're living on. Have they improved it or have they made it worse? And the society that allows things to be put forward that are correct and then absolutely ignored and not administered to is a reflection of that level of where they're at.
That's an important point there, Ginyara, that Yirrkala pointed, that the UNDRIP document was pretty good document. We've always said that. You know, Bob Hawke said that there wouldn't be any homeless people by the year so-and-so, and Kevin Rudd said sorry. And, you know, so there are all these wonderful milestones and important events in the history of mankind, but very few have delivered. And this is where the Yidinji Nation can make that possible.
No one's delivered. No one's delivered anywhere. The Aboriginal people are still being are being occupied. There's no two ifs and buts about that. It is being under a belligerent occupant. They don't even want to play the game, doesn't want to do it correctly. You know, I was talking to a bloke recently about the Uluru statement from the heart. And when you look at that, that was produced by Australians, by the way. Did Yidinji government representatives get invited to attend the workshops and the forums as they come around the regional areas? No, they didn't, not one. Because they can't legally see us. They can't even invite our people. They invite them in as Indigenous Australians. Then Indigenous Australians have to be there for the national interest of Australia, not Yidinji. So they brought in some Aboriginal native troopers, like I'll always call them, you know, poor buggers. They just don't know that they're being used by Australia to decoy the Aboriginal people away from their true sovereignty. They're trying to keep them away because they don't need them to go over there and assert what they're talking about in the Uluru Statement. So the Uluru Statement itself was compiled by Australians, the best that Australia could put together. And they said that the sovereignty of those Aboriginal nations is unceded. It was here first, not extinguished. It hadn't gone away. And it coexists. Now, that's a rather strange word to use in sovereignty because you can't. It coexists with the sovereignty of the Australian Crown. It's better than the sovereignty of the Australian Crown because it's got a doctrine to be here and it's first in time. And it hasn't been ceded. So the Australian sovereignty may not quite be the sovereignty that Australia thinks that it's got, which is why it's offensive to me and to the Yidinji Nation that Australia's out seeking a seat on the council, the Security Council, which produces things like UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. Hang on a sec. There were four countries that abstained or they refused it and rejected it outright. Who were those four countries? US, Canada, New Zealand, and good old Aussie. They refuse to accept it. No, we do not want this at all. Why? Because Australia knows that it's a belligerent occupant on the territories, those 250 territories that take up the whole continent. Not like Papua New Guinea, they've got 800 on an island. We've got 250, which means the nations are bigger. The Aboriginal nations take up a lot of country. Some of these ones out in the drier areas are huge. Bigger than England, for example. They are just massive. And yet, those people are not allowed to assert their sovereignty because there's a belligerent occupant that enforces its law upon people for subjugation. You will toe the line or we'll send our police force in. And by the way, the police force, I see there's a very racist element inside the NT police force, for example. You know, that come out in the news recently that they do have a racist element, which is sad because it's tarnishing the good police that are out there. It's same in the Queensland Police Force. Why did they refuse to acknowledge sovereignty is here? The Victorian Police, at least they said, yeah, we acknowledge. In the Uruk Commission, they said, yeah, we acknowledge that the sovereignty of the Aboriginal people is unceded. At least they could do that, yet Queensland refused outright. There will be no truth-telling in Queensland, or they won't. The Queensland Police will not participate in truth-telling. Why? Because there must be a dark past. There must be a lot of skeletons in that closet that they're trying to hide. And then as a state of the Commonwealth of Australia, they're saying, well, we really deserve a seat on the Security Council. When you cannot tell the truth as a police force, you deserve nothing from something like Security Council other than the Security Council sending troops down, by the way, sending troops to Australia to protect the Aboriginal people that are being forced to participate in Australia against their will. This is not a true and fair place in Australia. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah, you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today. We'll be back after the break with some final comments.
Hello, my name is Andrew, and I'm from Arnhem Land. My band called Andrew Guru Band, and you're listening to BBM 98.7.
Yeah, that's it's gone very, very quick. Yulam, some final comments. I guess the same thing that comes to mind is that Papua New Guinea is resource rich, but it's being used like a mining pit and a harvesting place for major companies around the world, multinational companies around the world, just like Australia.
Yeah, absolutely, just like Australia. What a horrible thought there. And there's a measure of your society, how healthy it is by what you're doing to your country. So, you know, obviously the message is the same. We're about coming together. It's about uniting, about being one with all the people on our nation. And Yidinji is promoting that and will continue to promote that. Nothing's going to stop that from happening. We've always been and will continue to be.
Yeah, a Ganyara.
Well, how else do we resolve? How else do we resolve the past? How else do we sort that out? We've got to settle that past, and how do we do it? What are we going to do with the Australians? Where do they go? Where's their homeland? We have to take them in as part of our family. And this is something that Yidinji's been offering all along. I don't know how long it's been now, but it's been forever and a day by the looks, that we will take the Australians in and look after them and ensure that they get the best deal possible. You know, we don't want to take their houses off them. They've worked long and hard for their house. Let them have their house. Australia, you don't affect them Australians that we allow to live in the houses that are on our land, on Yidinji land. Not on Australia, it's on Yidinji land. So let them have their house. Don't you take them out. Don't you force them that. So we're trying to say this for all Australians. We're trying to do the best we can, and we're not asking for money. What we are asking is that the UN, the United Nations, get to the Commonwealth of Australia, not Anthony the man personally, but to the Commonwealth of Australia that he wants to lead, say, look here, boy, get your house in order first before you come over here demanding a seat on the Security Council. You have to be beyond reproach. You've got to be a role model citizen. You've got to be one of the best part of the family in the UN before you come and get a seat on this council.
And just because there are other bad actors on the UN doesn't give an excuse to Australia to keep doing what's bad.
Absolutely. Do two wrongs make a right? No, it doesn't. You have to lead by example, Australia. If you want a seat on the Security Council, lead by example. Show the rest of the world that you are beyond reproach. That way, if you get our endorsement of the Aboriginal people, you will be the best in town. So if you want to have the accolade and the lights, have your name in lights, do what we're talking about and get permission to represent us for and on behalf of us at international law. Do it correctly so that Australia cannot be taken out by the Chinese, for example, you know, that can come in and do a treaty. Do things correctly and you'll last here forever.
That's it for today's show. Thank you for joining us once again here on Black Law Tribal Edition. May God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to the show. In the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord. And we'll catch you next week.